Blog Talk Radio.
Start to the year. So, with that being said,
you know, I'm just going to move forward on some things. I posted a couple of things to my page, and I think it's important for you guys to go over there and take a look on my Facebook page. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, if you go to the profile on Blog Talk Radio, it just give you the information about my Facebook page. But what I want you guys to know is I posted some information today, as well as I believe it was Thursday or Friday. There are opportunities for people that may have, you know, some type of record, whether it's ex-felony or ex-misdemeanor, and you're having a hard time finding a job. I posted some information on there. The one that I posted a few days ago was for CTA, Chicago Transit Authority. We all know how hard it is to get in that particular organization. They have a program specifically for people that have had some difficulties. So, you know, it's an apprenticeship program. I would, you know, implore you to go out there and take a look to see what's happening. You know, we just want to see you guys, you know, do better. And the information is out there, and I'll give it to you in a second. I'm pulling it up, but get out there and find out what's happening. And we just want you guys to, like I said, get out there. There are opportunities out there. Look for them. And it seems as though, you know, Chicago is really trying to step their game up. So that's a wonderful thing. Go for it, guys. Go for it. Here it is right here. CTA is expanding their ex-offender program. So apparently they must have had a program in place. It's just that nobody knew anything about it. So, you know, look the information up. Go to the CTA website. And, you know, they've had some wonderful results of this, looking at some of the stories, you know, because I read some of them last week. But they have 65 slots, you know, and basically what these people will be doing, they'll be cleaning the trains. And an additional 200 people will be hired to clean buses. So this is a chance for you to get into the CTA. You never know. If you perform well and show some initiative, this may open an opportunity for you to one day probably be one of the train engineers or one of the bus drivers. Who knows how that may work out or work in your favor. So just telling you to have a positive attitude, have a very positive attitude, go in, do a great job, and perform. So that was my public service announcement of the day. I just thought it was important to let you guys know that opportunities are opening up, and they're out there. And a young lady put some information on my page, and I'm going to tell you about that, about when you're out there doing job searches, when you're doing a Google search, that you may want to put in, what did she say, work opportunity tax credit. And so basically it says here, if your record is a barrier to employment, a lot of employers will want to hire you because they get a relatively big tax credit. So look that up, you know, looking for opportunities. We want to encourage you to excel, encourage you to go out and be productive, you know, because you want to feed yourself and your family. And we understand that, and we're wishing you the absolute best on that. Because, you know, as a human being, common human decency, dignity, and respect, that's what it's all about. So, yay! You know, guys, thank you so much. If I find out more information, I'll post it, Facebook page. I put it on Tumblr and send it out to Twitter as well. So you can find me on any of those. You'll find the information, and I'll start putting more information out because I get emails, I get alerts, all of that regarding this stuff. So, you know, I want to share it with you guys. I definitely need to start sharing that a little bit more. But, you know, we're wishing you the best, and that's how that goes. All right, people. So what is going on? What is going on? Raina, are you there?
Oh, okay. Hi.
You know, yeah, I'm laughing because for those of you that don't know, you know, I've had some challenges, some medical challenges, if you will. My sense of smell and taste are coming back. So the interesting thing is my favorite laundry detergent, well, I don't think it's going to be my favorite too much longer.
I understand.
Yeah, it smells like shit. And I'm like, I'm walking around smelling like malt liquor. You know?
Oh, no.
Well, it says lavender. I thought it was...
What's the maker? Who's the manufacturer?
Well, you know, no, it has lavender, and it was smelling like lavender to me at first. Or maybe my smell and taste is skewed right about now. Maybe it really does smell like lavender.
Yeah, maybe so, because that sounds a little weird. Malt liquor should not come to mind when one smells lavender. That's weird.
Yeah, because see, I just ordered a bunch of it, so my box came yesterday. I got it from a FedEx guy. Tossed it in the house, you know, before I ran out. And when I came back home, I opened the door, and this smell hit me. And I was like, what in the next? Because I don't drink. I don't drink at all. So I'm walking in the house, and I'm like, why is my house smelling like beer? So, of course, I want to go through the video footage to see who's been in my house, right? But that wasn't it. Basically, I went to the box, and I was like, okay, it's this, you know, I don't know if they changed their formula, but whatever. It was the funniest thing. But anyway, guys, you know, it's been an interesting journey here. But, yeah, you know, today we wanted to talk about YOLO. But before we get started, you know, our guest call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. And I wanted to talk about this YOLO thing. And call me old if you want to. I had no idea what in the world YOLO was. And, you know, I kept hearing the kids call out YOLO. YOLO. I'm like, what the hell is that? So, of course, I had to Google it. And then it was talking about some song. I still have yet to hear that song. And if I did hear it on the radio, I probably turned. I don't know. I am old. Didn't know what it was. So, you know, I looked it up, and YOLO, Y-O-L-O, basically it means you only live once. Now, you know, over the past week, I've been doing a bunch of research on YOLO, what it means, the effects that it's had, you know, because I had my initial assessment, and I wanted to go out and kind of survey a little bit and see what, you know, other people were thinking. And so one of the articles I came across, you know, was talking about this particular acronym and how it became popular when a rapper used it in a song, and how it became twisted, because the original meaning of it is totally different than what it has turned out to be. And there are some negative effects of it. But, you know, here it says, when it first came out, it was intended to be a phrase used to encourage people to press on. It meant to work hard and achieve your dreams. Since you only live once, you should make the most of every moment. And so that, you know, I can respect, you know, definitely. And, you know, again, we want to encourage you guys, live your life to the fullest. Live your life now, but we want you to do positive, productive things. Not, you know, get drunk, drive 100 miles an hour, turn in the corner on two wheels, and end up killing yourself and your passengers, which is a situation that happened in California. Unfortunately, and I, you know, it was tragic that those young people lost their lives, and, you know, some young rappers, you know, in that area. But, I mean, it's not just them. And the rapper name, his name was Inky or Jules or something to that effect. And, you know, that's not the only example. There are other examples in which people have made some really, really bad decisions, you know, using YOLO, you know, as their excuse. And, you know, you only live once, but it just depends on your perspective. It depends on perspective. And it's just, it's very important that we start going into these communities and showing them some of the pathology behind some of their thinking. And I'll tell you about this one article that I found. And it was talking about the millennials. You know, millennials basically is the generation now that, you know, the millennials came after Generation Y. I'm part of Generation X. So you have Generation X, Generation Y, millennials, and there are generations before us, of course, but I'm just talking about this particular age range. And so basically, with the millennials, with many millennials, you know, when they were, you know, tossing up the anthem of YOLO, you know, they were basically, you know, referring to, you know, mistakes that they've made in their lives and deciding to do, you know, something to improve or to fix that mistake. Other people used it to do something really outlandish, and it's just interesting because with some people, they take the phrase or the acronym of YOLO, and they'll say, well, YOLO, you only live once, and they'll apply for a promotion at their job that, you know, that they probably thought they never had a chance, you know, to receive. But they went on and applied it in for it anyway. Well, in some cases, some of these people don't have a job to apply to, let alone to apply for, you know, a promotion. And it's about perspective. It's about perspective and about taking this type of, you know, acronym and seeing the influence it's having on young people. So, again, you only live once, you know, instead of using it to be destructive or to put yourself in a more precarious situation, why don't you take that YOLO and apply it to something positive? So maybe hook up with other people in the neighborhood and, you know, you can start small businesses. And people are like, start small businesses? How? You know, we just had some crazy snow in Chicago. I remember when I was younger and we wanted money. We would go and shovel the neighbor's snow and try to make some money that way, you know, pool our money together so that there were things that we wanted to do for the summer, or we would just take the money and maybe go out and, you know, do some things, you know, go out and buy a pizza or something like that that we could all share, you know, because it was a collective effort. So, you know, it's extremely important that, you know, we take things and put it in its proper perspective. I think we have Travis on the line. Are you there, Travis?
Hey, I am here. You only live once, so take care of yourself. Take care, right? You only live once. Take care of yourself. You only live once. Don't waste time pretending.
Exactly.
Superstition means anything in your life.
That's
please
right.
Please don't waste, right?
Exactly.
You only live once, so take care of your ass. It's basically what we're trying to tell you here. Right?
Exactly.
They take it the opposite way. You only live once, so let me do some crazy stuff. I could get hurt. Only live once, let me ride this skateboard down the hill. Oh, really? Well, if you only live once, put on a helmet.
Exactly. You know, and again, you know, instead of putting $5,000 rims on your car, take that $5,000 and invest it in a vocational, you know, certification program. You know, they have some out there. And it's not, your situation is not hopeless, and you're truly not helpless. And, you know, we want to encourage you guys, take these things and use it for something positive. Use it for something positive because, again, you know, something got lost in the translation here. You know, I don't know if it was the translation or the comprehension, but, you know, that's why I say that it's imperative that, you know, the baby boomers and, you know, Generation X, that we get out there and we start talking to some of these young folks and, you know, directing them to some positive resources and encouraging them. Because with some of these people, all they need is a little encouragement and some guidance. You know, sometimes they may not have, you know, had the guidance that they need. But it's you know, I'm making it seem very simple, and it's not this simple. You know, it takes a lot. And
It is simple, Kim. The boomers and Generation X are to blame because they were the last ones that had decent schools to go to. The boomers just barely got into school, right? Then you got the X. They got some good schooling, and they were also in that time when they start turning the schools around and taking away funding for things.
Right.
And they didn't. And when they became adults, they didn't fight hard enough to to put it back for the next generation. They were too busy building up 401ks and bank accounts, not recognizing that to even do that, you're actually betting against yourself.
Exactly. And the irony of that is the 401ks and some of the investments that they made were wiped out.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
the advances that we made. Go ahead.
It's a trap and a trick, okay? They
exactly.
convince you any kind of way they can. If you do this, this, and this, you can be rich too. And then when you least expect it, all your money disappeared. Gotcha. It was just a trick and a trap the whole time, and they were just waiting to take your stuff.
Exactly, exactly. Because I'll be the first one to say when, you know, I've been through two bubbles. You know, the first one was in 2000, 2001. That's when the IT sector just popped, you know. And so a lot of the, you know, internet companies and internet startups and IPOs, they just went toes up. And
yeah, but that was because people were also putting money into things that just had a name. Like,
exactly.
Like DirtySock.com. It's going to be something. It's going to be something, you know, y'all.
Right, right. But see, people didn't understand that these IT companies, they were never designed to make a profit. And unless you work in IT, you know, a lot of, and I know, you know, I worked at a company, the stock went from $2 a share up to $50 a share, and they were convincing, you know, some of the workers to invest their money. I knew better. And, you know, I made some money off of it, but not as much as some other people. But then some of those same people lost everything because the stock went all the way down to 50 cents a share.
Hey,
you
Kim, you said you made some money. Can I borrow 50 bucks?
It's in the mail, Travis.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm generous, if nothing else, okay?
Oh, I'm with you. And that's, you know what? That's another thing somebody should add on to the end of a YOLO. You only live once, so be generous.
That's right.
You know, take it to the positive, not to the negative. Right? You only live once, so let me do something crazy like a person. You know what it is? They take it to the opposite, right? You only live once, so let me do something crazy that only a person with nine lives would even consider doing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the whole thing. You know, there have been times whereas, you know, I'll see someone and you can tell that they're having, you know, a situation or a hard time or what have you. And my whole thing is, how can I be of service to you? How can I help? You know, I mean, I remember one time, you know, when I was unemployed and getting my unemployment checks. And, you know, one time I was at the grocery store. I was fortunate that I was still able to, you know, take care of my general needs. And I was walking out to my car, and this lady walked up to me. Now, those of you who know me, I kind of have this thing about people walking up on me. When I see you're walking towards me, I'll put my hand out and say, stop. Because I have to have a certain amount of distance between you and me for me to feel comfortable. And, you know, I told her to stop. And she was like, ma'am. And I could tell that, you know, this woman, you know, it wasn't an addiction issue. It wasn't, you know, someone coming up trying to scam me out of money for, you know, drug addiction. Even though, you know, I have, you know, a very sympathetic heart for that as well. But I could tell this woman needed help, and she was asking me if I could help her. And I said, okay, hold on. I said, let me put my groceries in the car, which I did. And, you know, I said, you know, and I talked to her. And she was saying how she had lost her job and she couldn't feed her children. And, you know, she was just going through. So I said, okay. So I took her arm. We went inside the grocery store, pulled out a cart. And we went through. I had her pick out, you know, a whole chicken, got some hamburger, because, you know, she had a couple of kids. And, you know, got some bread and buns and got some juice. And I'm like, oh, well, they want some dessert. Here, get a cake, you know, so they can have some cake. And, you know, even got some ice cream. And I said, is this enough? And she was like, no, this is fine. You know, I have money coming in at the end of the week or whatever, the next week or what have you. And I said, so this will last you a few days? She was like, this is more than enough. And I said, okay. And so I went up and I paid for it, and then I gave her an additional $20. And I said, well, here you go. And I said, I don't know you, so I can't give you a ride home. And I said, but, and she only lived a block or two away, but it wasn't too heavy that she could carry it.
You cracked me up, Kim. You cracked me up. I don't know you, so you got to carry this shit yourself. Is that enough? Oh, that's more than enough. Well, why don't we put some of this shit back? No, I'm just. Oh, you cracked me up.
Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, I got the food for her, and then I gave her the $20 on top of it, because if she, you know, if she wasn't sincere, she would have been like, no, I don't want the food, just give me the money. And that's not what I wanted to do. You know, it was just, you know, it's interesting, but, you know, I hope that, you know, by being able to help her with her situation, she was like, well, what could she do? She wanted my information so that she could give it back to me. And I told her, no, just help someone else. And that's pretty much been the premise of, you know, whenever I help people, I'm like, no, just help someone else, help them. You know, that means a lot more to me than anything else. And I feel that that type of attitude should be infectious.
It really should be. I can't be everywhere helping everybody, but if I get some help, I will pass the help along. I mean, it's simple as, you know, being on the freeway and letting somebody cut in without acting like them getting in front of you is going to, you know, ruin your day. It's just ridiculous.
Right.
Simple
exactly.
kindness.
It really
simple
is.
Kindness. And you know what else I want to see more of, Kim?
Mm-hmm.
Since you only live once, I want to see more bully slaying, okay? There's a comedian, a friend of mine, who like travels with Chris Rock, and he had a bit. He was talking about there's bullied people and there are bullies. And I'm like, you missed a category. There's also bully slayers. And we need to figure out a way to shine a positive light on those who slay bullies, whether it just be not sitting silently, letting the bully get away with whatever they're doing, or
mm-hmm.
people who actually maybe use humor to put the bully in their place. Okay?
Exactly. You know, and the thing is that with some of these people, some of these bullies, they really think they're getting away with something, and they're not appreciating the fact that, you know, they could actually be really, truly, you know, destroying somebody's life. We have William on the line with us. Hey, William.
Oh,
and,
hey, I fell victim to daylight savings. I was sitting there seriously thinking it was 12:28. I was like, I got plenty of time. No, I don't.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. You know, I complained about that at the beginning of the show. But about, you know, this daylight savings time messing me up. But, yeah, no, when it comes to bullies, you know, we definitely, you know, it gets to a point that you have to start, you know, putting people on blast, if you will. See, the thing is that bullies don't like to be bullied.
Or called out, not even bullied. How about just called out? Bullies probably, many bullies are bullies because they were bullied, right? But
right.
You got to snap them out of it some kind of way. You don't have to kick their ass to snap them out of it. You can. It could be a simple, hey, man, what are you doing? We don't do that here. You know?
Right.
You know, it could be really like that. We don't do that around here. We're nice to everybody around here.
Right. Exactly, you know, and it's just interesting. But, I mean, there are a lot of negative influences in just communities overall. It's not any one specific community, because I've seen it in all of these communities as far as, like, the bullying and, you know, reckless behavior. And, again, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, and I was like, that is not normal behavior. And I said, however, what exactly is normal? What is normal anymore? And who defines what normal is? You know, however, you know, going 100 miles an hour drunk, taking a corner on two wheels, sorry, that's not normal behavior. There's no way you can define that as normal behavior. But again, it goes back to some people did not have role models. They didn't have mentors. And, you know, so this is not to shame anybody or anything. It's just that we need to start going back to the communities and going back, you know, what we were talking about, Generation X and, you know, the baby boomers. Where are the mentors? And many of us have left the communities. Many of us have not reinvested back in the communities, especially some of the poorer communities, you know, both Latino, you know, white and black. You know, you go to some of these communities, because, I mean, you have to be fair about it. You have food deserts, and if they do have grocery stores, you know, if the food is good, it's close to expiration date. And yeah, you know, if they have to catch the bus to get to the grocery store, you have to catch three buses, a train, you know, you know.
You're right. And the truth is, if you are smart enough to snap out of a bad area's stupid, you are not going to want to have for your sustenance, you know, pork rinds and grape soda. You're not going to do that. So you're going to be gone. You're not going to live in a food desert. You're not going to live around. You're not going to be the crab crawling out of the bucket getting snatched down by somebody else's claws. You're going to go away. I mean, you just are. I don't live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin anymore. I live in Seattle, Washington, where weed is legal.
But, you know, but that kind of takes us into the other part when, you know, I'm talking about, you know, some of the pathological results of religiosity. And I'm talking about the religious mindset. And what I mean by that, so I can make sure people understand where I'm coming from with this, I'm talking about how some of the, how religion is pretty much set up like a Ponzi scheme. It's set up like a pyramid scheme. So what happens is the person at the top, which is the religious leaders and your politicians, they're at the top for a reason. And they have all of the money, and they are prospering for a reason. And they have the people on the levels beneath them looking up and saying, well, I can have that one day, but all I have to do is give my tithes and offerings. And it creates a perpetual cycle of poverty.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
yeah,
that's
every
not
time
no
you look at a preacher's, every time you see a preacher's suit, it could have been a uniform for the kids. Every new Cadillac could have been a van with a wheelchair lift going around taking people to, you know, to some meals. Every time, you know what I'm saying? The preacher's every time the preacher's wife gets her hair done, it could have been something else for somebody else who needed it a little bit more than she did.
Exactly, exactly. But then it's like this. If you're going to utilize those services, which are fine, you know, my thing is that if you could just keep the money circulating in the neighborhood, you know, it just benefits the neighborhood in general. When it comes to, you know, again, going back to, you know, this prosperity gospel in particular, the gospel of wealth and just religion in general, you have people that are at the very bottom, you know, poor people, and they're saying, okay, well, pastor or, you know, honorable for the politician, so-and-so, they're wealthy, they're rich. And they say, all I have to do is give a percentage of my money and my dedication and my time and my skills, you know, you willing workers out there. And if we do these things, then we can be wealthy like them. But what the people aren't taking into consideration is the pastor and the politicians are wealthy because you're giving them your money.
Mm-hmm. The priest and the king.
Right.
The priest and the king, right? One, Ingersoll said, the king ruled by force, the priest by fear, and both by both.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about the prosperity sermon, I think it's one of the meanest things put on our community. I look at it like a combination of the most addictive parts of religion and the nastiest parts of Amway combined you.
Yep.
Right? It's the nastiest
parts
of Amway. You give me some money and God will give you some later. And if you believe that, just go. That is slot machine think.
Exactly.
Slot machine think.
That's
there you
right.
go. Oh, you got some slot machine think. Oh, that's a good one. That'll snap
it's like
out
playing
of it.
The lottery. It's like playing
mm-hmm.
the lottery. You know, you every week you put a couple of dollars in, hoping that your jackpot is coming, if you will. You know, if you scratch this ticket off, or you play this particular set of numbers that you know, one day you're going to win the jackpot because you believe, you know, despite the
mm-hmm.
odds that are there. People aren't looking at that, but, you know, they're looking at that. And then you have some of these people, some of these politicians pandering to, you know, their constituents saying, you know, and when I hear some of these political speeches and I hear all of this God, this, Jesus, that, and I'm looking at them, and you can tell that they're actors because just by the look on their faces, they're like, you know, they can't believe the people are buying, you know, what they're saying. But taking that all into consideration, you know, some of these politicians and some of these preachers, they're out here peddling the Bible and religion and Jesus like it's a $10 piece of crack. And the people are
mm-hmm.
buying it up and taking it in and smoking it up and hoping that it's going to make them feel better, that it's kind of like a salve for whatever store or, you know, and, you know, the thinking, just the mindset behind that. And I don't blame the people.
No.
Because,
it's not their fault. It's not their fault. They're just stuck, Kim. Look, if with the slot machine thing, another way to look at it is the preachers and priests teach charity. This is natural. Okay, for them to do so, because they live off charity. All beggars teach that others should give. Robert Green.
Exactly. And Rob in the chat room said, give me money so God can give you money so you can give me more money. But and that's true. And that's why I said, you know, we need to take a better look at all of this because, you know, when you look at it, if they're being told that to give money and not to complain about things, that just sit back and be quiet and God will take care of these things, look at this, people. You have your pastors who are kind of buddy-buddy with some of these politicians. That's why they're in your church giving little mini sermonettes, you know, when it's time for them to be elected, but you don't see them any other time, right? But and it's always certain, you know, politicians. But anyway, I'm going to issue a challenge to that one day, run on some platform, be, you know, I'm out and I'm open, and then go to the churches that normally wouldn't have me, and whenever they have another politician of whatever party, they have to allow the other parties to come in. See, again, challenging a 501c3. But anyway.
No, I'm with you on that one right there. No, that's tippy-top right there. You got to do that. You got to do that.
Exactly.
It needs to be done everywhere right now.
Exactly. And, you know, going back to that, you know, you have these pastors preaching, you know, these sermons just to sit back and be content, let go and let God. And when you do that, they're teaching the people not to challenge the politicians. Well, that works well for the politicians because in many cases they are not doing what's best for their constituents. That's why, you know, a lot of these churches are set in, you know, economically depressed and disadvantaged neighborhoods, and it doesn't get better. And the politicians aren't held accountable. And then they, you know, you get into a cycle of reelecting the same person over and over, the name recognition. There was no way that Jesse Jackson Jr. should have been reelected when he didn't even campaign.
But they did that. It's the games, as Dick Gregory would say, it's the games they play. It's the games.
Yes. Exactly.
Ingersoll's, Kim Ingersoll said, the king owned the bodies and the priest the souls of men. One lived on taxes, the other on tithing. One was a robber, the other was a beggar, and each was both.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Each was both.
Exactly. And, you know, I just think it's important for people to understand, you know, how all of this works, you know, especially for, you know, the prosperity gospel. It preys on poverty because they know that many people, you know, are in desperate situations. And, you know, we've all been there at some point in our lives. You know, I can't say we all, but many of us have. And you're like, how am I going to, you know, pay my rent? You know, how? What are we going to eat? You know, how am I going? You know, I need a job. Where is this going to come from? How am I going to do this? You know, just all the questions that you have. And, you know, you feel helpless, desperate, hopeless. And then you're so vulnerable. Vulnerable. And they come in and they take advantage of that. Come over here and pray. We're going to pray that, you know, God helps you to find a job, or, you know, pray that the money is going to come through an unexpected blessing, if you will. And
unexpected. Magic wishful thinking. People need
to
stop that because Ingersoll said, what did he say? Two hands helping is better than 10,000 lips praying.
Exactly. But see, what happens is, you know, those, you know, many of these people are, you know, in poverty, or maybe going, if they're not in poverty, they may be going through a tough emotional time, what have you, whatever the situation may be. And what happens is this particular gospel, the prosperity gospel in particular, they come in and they play and manipulate those people's emotions and exploit those vulnerabilities and tell them, look at what the pastor has. You can have that too. All you have to do is give us a percentage of the, you know, the very little that you have. And then they take the story about the woman in the Bible who gave the least amount of money when they were taking the offering, but it was her all. It was all that she had left, but it was the least amount than everybody else, but she got the biggest blessing because, you know, her heart was pure. And it's bullshit. It's rope-a-dope. You know, that's what we're trying to tell you. And what's happening is they, you know, they prey on the poverty, and they know that these people want to get out of the conditions that they're in. And it's just, you know, it's
mean is what it is, Kim. It's mean. It's mean.
Yeah.
They hopscotch you around enough of parts in the Bible mixed with stuff that they just made up as a way to hopscotch you down the path to the collection plate. Throwing a couple songs.
Mm-hmm.
See you next week. See you next week. I'll pray for you.
You in this little euphoria. It's like they create this euphoria. You know, you sing the songs, you do the little praise and worship, you know, and the pastor kind of whips you into like this little reverie, if you will, with his, you know, sermons. And then, you know, you leave there and you're hyped up for a little while, but then after, you know, you get home and Monday hits and you go into the office to a job that you hate around people you don't like, but you got to, you know, grin it and skin it.
You click online to check your bank account and you go, hey, what did I do with my money? I gave it to somebody.
Exactly, exactly. We have a call on the line from 989. May I ask who's calling?
Hey, Kim, it's Alphonse.
Hey, Alphonse, how are you?
It's been pretty good. It's been a long time since we talked.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Just was listening in. I pretty much agree with everything you're saying. I just don't like the, I guess don't agree with the context when you say religion in general. And I think the other caller was, he was quoting Robert Ingersoll a lot. And, you know, that's fine. But Martin Luther was also, I mean, a part of the, led the Reformation of the church, the Roman Catholic Church. He was totally against alms. He was totally against tithe. So I think that, I know we need to be careful and specifically, you know, target the black church. That's who's really teaching, like, prosperity gospel and, you know, some other churches. I mean, that's evident, but when we speak in religion in general, I mean, that's just totally wrong because there's a lot of different religions that don't accept tithes or offerings or anything like that or operate in prosperity. So
exactly. Oh, yeah,
true.
That's
Martin Luther.
Beginning.
Martin Luther actually helped me. I grew up at Lutheran school, and when I found out that Martin Luther had 95 things that he disagreed with the Catholic Church about, I was like, oh, you can have questions? You can call out stuff and say, hey, this is wrong? Well, Martin Luther did a good job, but he didn't go far enough. He didn't have the courage to keep going. Because if you would sit there and say purgatory ain't true, then you got to be able to say a talking snake ain't true, too. Okay? Have the courage to go all the way.
This is the thing. Like, you have to consider the time frame. I think as humans, you know, our aspect of time, you know, deceives us. It was the 1500s when Martin Luther was operating. He really didn't have a lot of science back then. So he only knew what he knew. But for someone in 2013 to say, well, Martin Luther should have did this, it's a little subjective, you know, because I'm pretty sure people 5,000 years from now are going to clown us. So, I mean, it's just a part of history.
They will.
Someone took Martin Luther's ideas and they, you know, grew up on them. You know, that's what, I mean, everything evolves, not just, you know, from a biological or a scientific form. Like, society evolves too. Religion, sad enough, religion evolves too.
I think to advance at all clowns the past, okay? To know that the earth is round does clown all those who thought it wasn't round. It does clown them. I can't help clowning them in their ignorance. If somebody believed that there's a hell, and you start researching, you go, well, okay, looks to me like the people who believed that there was a hell, that started out with barbarians who were thinking about volcanoes and maybe burn their enemies at the stake. Then I do have to clown that so that other people today, you know, aren't.
And I agree with you, Sam, but do you understand the resources that we have? It's 2013. Now, clowning people nowadays, I 100% agree. Like, because I always question. My thing is, I don't slander anymore. I question and I offer criticism. But to say somebody in the 1500s to clown them and they had less resources, I just think that's real subjective. Like, who am I to clown Martin Luther?
if he was right all the way, he was right all the way. And if he wasn't, he wasn't.
What is right though? Like, look at the time frame. Martin Luther lived in. Look at his environment. Like, he went against the Catholic Church,
which is very courageous.
Yes, that was courageous.
It's extremely courageous to put up the 95 theses, right? But it would be even more courageous to go further. That's all I said.
And I think that's very subjective for you to say that. Like, it's 2013.
Okay, so wait a minute. No. It was accurate to say that to go further would take more courage. So you're saying that it's, wouldn't it? Because he only went so far. So if he took one more step, that would take a little more courage. That would take a little more questioning, as you say.
But he completed. Okay, so if Martin Luther King was an atheist, would you look at the I Have a Dream speech differently? I mean, I know his.
If Martin Luther King. Oh, so you're going to Martin Luther King now? Okay, we're switching up.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm saying.
Would I look at it differently?
On the same lines.
No, Martin used the book that he had that most people, you know, that more people had one around or had knew of, you know, in order to do that. There are a lot of people who believe that the preachers hijacked the civil rights movement from the secularists. And there's a lot of people who feel that, yeah, things could have been different. But on the other hand, maybe not. You wouldn't have had the churches were the only places where you could meet. So you had to stay there, right?
But if you want to get real about
Martin Luther King Jr., if Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to have a church and preach a prosperity sermon, he would have had all our money.
Of course, but I think that only thing I'm addressing is don't take the act away because of what the person believes. Like Martin Luther King Jr. was clearly a Christian pastor. That doesn't take away the act of what he done. Martin Luther was a Lutheran. Like he started the Lutheran Reformation. That was a clear cut beginning.
He made things better, right? He made things better. But look, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Constitution and did a lot of great things and brought up slavery in Congress like 80 some times trying to abolish it. But he still was a rapist pedophile. He still was sleeping with Sally Hemings, who was his daughter's, who was his wife's half sister, given to him by a gift by his father-in-law. That's still nasty.
But I think he's getting off topic. Like, I just wanted to
say. I know, but
say,
I'm just saying you.
But you see, the two people are religious figures that did something positive. Like Thomas Jefferson, I mean, that's totally different. That's kind of political. So I kind of wanted to say religious figures that did something positive. I mean, because we don't come up with
political?
Original. Like, everybody, like I said, our time deceives us. We don't come up with original ideas. People will take our ideas and they will build upon them, good or bad. Someone took the ideals of Martin Luther. Someone took the ideals of Martin Luther King Jr. and built upon them. And for us to say that, you know, they could have did this or they could have did that is subjective because we have to.
Wait a minute, but shouldn't you try to improve on something and say, couldn't they do better or can't we do better in this time? I don't see what's wrong with saying they could have done better. Everybody could have done better. I could have got up a little earlier and not be sitting there hungry and irritable.
let's bring it back into perspective about today. You know, we had those people, you know, we have, you know, their lives and their accomplishments to use as examples and take that information, look at what they did, how it affected the church, how it affected the community, how it affected people. Take that information and bring it to modern times, bring it to now, and see how we can go into the communities and actually affect positive change. And even though they were religious in stature or what have you, you know, they made some positive changes, you know, in the communities and in the world. So I would never take that away from Martin Luther or Martin Luther King Jr. or Gandhi or any of these people. They made some positive changes. And again, you know, I guess some of my questioning, you know, in regards to YOLO and religious thinking is, where is the disconnect? What has happened? What has changed since then? You know, because, you know, again, I'm not necessarily trying to eradicate religion. There are some people that absolutely need it to function. And if they absolutely need religion to function, then you leave them alone and leave them where they be. But for the ones that... Yeah, and but the thing is that, again, I'm talking about, and a lot of times when I, you know, the direction or the angle that I'm coming from is, how can I be a better person? How can I be more of service to the community? How can we take, you know, this free thought movement, you know, if you will, and take, you know, the information that we have, the knowledge that we have, and actually go into these communities and make a positive change. You know, even if we can't go in and open up small businesses in the communities, how can we go out and encourage and support the people that are in these dire situations, if you will, and get out there and maybe hand out bags of groceries? When I was a member of a mega church, I just basically refused at one point to give any tithes or offerings. And what I would do is I would go and take my money and go to, like, you know, different grocery stores where you can buy things cheap and have my coupons and all of that. And I would make bags of food and groceries. And I would put enough in there for a week, but enough for a couple of people. And what I would do is, when I saw people, I would take the bag out of my cart and hand it to them when they were asking for change and tell them to help someone else. You know, I gave them paper plates, you know, put a little deodorant in there, those little mini deodorants, all of that. And then I would put the receipts from my shopping in the little envelope at church and tell them, this is where my tithes and offering went. Of course, I didn't know all about that. I got a phone call.
Well, what did they say to you about that, Kim?
God bless you.
Let them decide where the money goes. And I'm like, you know.
But
and
I think oh, I'm sorry to cut you off, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, as far as a free thought movement, it starts on an individual basis. There's different people I talk to, like, within religion and different religions, because, you know, I'm out in Arizona, so I talk to different people of different religions, different sets of the religion. You always have to display some type of knowledge about their religion to make them feel comfortable. And then on the other, like the upside, the downside to that, they already got a preconceived notion about atheists or non-believers, if you want to say that. They already think we assholes. They already think we hate God. And I think the responsibility, you don't have a problem with that word, but the responsibility is to show them that, no, we're not assholes. Like, we probably know more than about your religion than you do.
Right.
And you can talk to us, and we don't, and you'll end up walking away first. Like, my thing is, if I'm going to talk to somebody, I'm not going to use the phrase agree to disagree. Because why are we even talking? If you already got that in your mind, well, I'm just going to agree to disagree on that. Why the fuck are you talking to me then? Like, why are we wasting each other's time?
Right.
When someone says agree to disagree,
the whole idea of talking about something is to come to an understanding. Like, if you can't talk to someone, like, you know what, from your point of view or your worldview, I understand why you think like that. If you can't do that, then don't waste each other's time. I think it starts with the individual basis as far as free thought.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the agree to disagree, the reason why when I, you know, I'll sometimes let that go when people say that, and the reason for it is I'm tired of having a circular argument.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're going forever, and it gets to a point where it's like, you know what, you know, I even need a drink or an aspirin, so I'm going to let this conversation go.
Yeah, that's the new thing you got to do, and it works every time. They say something just totally subjective, be like, you know what, from your point of view, from your worldview, I understand that. But can you understand, from my worldview, that makes no sense.
Exactly.
And if you say from the naturalistic world, that makes no sense. That'll stop them right there.
Naturalistic world.
The Bible is this, I don't consider the Bible evidence. What do you have next? It works for me instead of saying, let's agree to disagree.
Well, no, the agree to disagree thing is just a talking point that they are taught to use to kind of just dissuade you from any logical thinking. And I know I was taught this, and several of my family members taught this in church, is just the usual talking points like that to kind of close off the conversation, because they want to plant the seed of Jesus inside you and let it grow eventually, because eventually you'll be so stuck on that perceived paradox that you'll come back for more and more and more. That is the thought behind that. That is how they, I guess, want to trick you into believing what they believe. But what I do is I replace Jesus with something very common. You can see it every day. Unicorns, fairies, cockatrices, basilisks, trolls, goblins, anything from any fantasy game that I've played in the last 20-something years, I'll replace it and still. So once you put it into perspective like that, they get a little upset, but they get the point, because you can't, if I can replace your theology so easily with something that you know is fiction, then it kind of dawns on them without me saying it, because I found out that I have a sort of a condescending tone sometimes when I'm talking to theists, because I really do believe shit that they believe is stupid. So I've found a way to kind of work around that, I guess I could say. But I wanted to go back to a point real quick where you were talking about we shouldn't really, you know, be too judgmental of people in the past because of what we have nowadays. I think that in and of itself is very subjective. We had people back in the day during the Renaissance coming up with some of the most extraordinary ideas in the world. I mean, back before Arabs had Islam, they created algebra, and we still use that to this day. To think that their thinking capabilities were limited in any sort of capacity is just a little bit short-sighted. I hold them just as responsible as I do people today on certain issues. Things like medicine, they did not have the technology that we have today. That is understandable. But one of Martin Luther King's, I guess I could say, as a shortcoming, is that he used religion as a motivator and as a driving force behind the movement. Could he have done it as an atheist? He probably wouldn't have the backing, but he could have, because he's still a human being.
Ask the same question, though. Like, I understand why you think it's subjective, but do you understand that I was only referring to religious figures? Only the two examples I used was religious figures who had a problem with the like, churches in itself. Like even Martin Luther King said, he felt the world is most separated on Sundays.
Yes.
The community is most separated on Sundays. So
yes.
I'm not, cause as far as science, like I'll never like knock someone or like that science. Like I just want you to understand that I was only talking about religious figures, using that example to say that someone couldn't do it better. Like I think that's subjective.
Oh, yeah, and it's ironic that you would say that. That's an upcoming show, as a matter of fact, in April sometime. Religion, you know, basically is going to be talking about religion and racism, how religion and colonialism basically undergirds racism, and it's going to be really interesting. I'm doing the research on that now, but, yeah.
Oh, cool.
You know, Sunday is one of the most segregated days in the entire week, you know, that hour, you know, that,
yeah.
you know, certain set of hours, you know, for church, it is. You know, look at some of the Southern Baptists. You know, I've had some of people regarding them and how they did not view blacks as whole people. You know, they didn't even view blacks as being capable of being real Christians because we were less than human. And, you know, it's just, the whole thing is a mess, but we have another caller on the line. Well, let me see here. We have Alfred on the line, but then we have 804 on the line as well. 804?
Yes, how y'all doing today? This is Deborah from Richmond.
Hey, Deborah. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How y'all doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. I'm enjoying this. I'm sorry I'm late, you know.
It's okay. It's okay. You know, we're just trying to kind of pull things into perspective and bring it into modern times. And it's great that we had these other examples. Now, I want to make, you know, make something clear regarding, you know, when we're talking about the religious thinking and, you know, the prosperity gospel and, you know, just even beyond the prosperity gospel with some of these churches, we're not talking about everyone. And, you know, to make sure that, you know, I'm clear about that, there are actually some, you know, religious institutions that are doing what they need to do to help the community. They are giving back into the community. I think we just finished up on the National Week of Black Awareness of HIV and AIDS. But, you know, the flip side of that is they recognize it for 1 week out of 52, but then also they receive grant money as well. So, yeah, they're going to recognize it because they're being paid to recognize it. And the thing is that they don't even understand the nuance behind that. You're only going to recognize, you know, a condition and illness that's hurting our community disproportionately because you're being paid to recognize it. They don't see the irony in that.
Wow.
And, you know, we need to talk about these things. I think we have Nakomi. Is this Nakomi on the line?
Yeah.
Hi, Kim.
Nakomi, I miss you.
Hi. Hi, good morning, everyone, or afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
I was sitting there. I heard you say my name. I was actually doing something else. I was like, oh. Hold on. That's one. How's everybody doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine. Can't complain.
There you go. There you go. But it's just, you know, again, you know, there's a catch-22 in, you know, a lot of this. And that's why I say, you know, it's important that we, you know, look at it from a broader perspective, but also not to pigeonhole everyone because, again, you know, I kind of have some issues with the prosperity gospel. And believe it or not, it was the prosperity gospel. Okay, I was a non-believer when I was 11, 12 years of age. Didn't believe for a long time. Got into a relationship and was in a relationship with a theist and my best friend. And they convinced me to go to church. And so I figured that, okay, I'm an adult now. Life is a little different. I see things differently. Let me give it a chance. Went to church, started getting pretty serious about it, studying and trying to talk to the different pastors or what have you. They couldn't answer my questions. You know, things weren't making sense to me. I'm like, this does not make logical sense. and they kept telling me logic has no place in church, logic has no place in the Bible. And I'm sitting there looking at them like they're crazy, but I'm still going along. I'm like, okay, everybody over here looks happy. I want to be happy like these people, so I'm going to continue on and give it a chance. And what happened was these people started liking me. I ended up in a ministry, ended up on a ministry board, got pulled into the inner circles. And that was all it took, because I saw things and heard things, and it was not reconciling, and, you know, the way that they treated the people and the way they talked about them behind their backs, and just a lot of, it was just outrageous. So I went to three different churches, with the third and final church being a mega church, and sitting there listening to these sermons, and that's the mega church is the one I refused to give money to, and I was going out and giving away the groceries, and basically listening to the sermons, and I took some of their Bible classes, everything, you know, I was trying to do the right thing, or what I perceived to be the right thing. And basically, with the mega church, you know, I came to the conclusion that the God that they serve was not a sovereign God, which meant he had to do what the people told him to do. And this is what they teach in these churches, that if you tell God you need $1 million and you demand it and you tell him, he has to obey. This is what they teach people. And when it doesn't happen, you know, I believe it sets people back even further than where they were when they first went to the church. But anyway, to kind of bring it back to play, you know, I decided that God was not sovereign according to what they were teaching. And basically I started paying attention. And I saw that a lot of it was smoke and mirrors, because, you know, things weren't exactly what they were portraying them to be. And again, like I said, I was in an inner circle. I saw some stuff, and I'm like, this is craziness, you know, and I walked away. I mean, I had thrown away a relationship because it was not, quote unquote, godly. It was, you know, an abomination according to what they were saying. And walked away from it all. And, you know, the interesting thing is the person I was in the relationship with was the one encouraging me to go to church. But after I walked away from church, and, you know, particularly that church, you know, rekindled that relationship, brought it back full circle. And they never bothered me about going to church ever again. And whenever I would say I'm thinking about going to church, they pretty much would be like, no, and discourage me walking. You know, it was the funniest thing, but, you know, it all goes back to, again, you know, what these people are teaching and how it plays on the vulnerabilities of people. And if people were to pay attention, because I was reading something, and I'm looking for it now because I have it, but, oh, yeah, it was talking about YOLO, you only live once. And one of the answers here says, you know, they were asking if they thought that YOLO was correct. And it says here, I think so, yeah. Depending on what religion you believe in, nothing is guaranteed after you die. So you've got to do everything you can now. You only live once. Now, I guess my question is, if they can put together, you know, nothing is guaranteed after you die, see, it's that particular part of the statement that caught my attention. Nothing is guaranteed after you die. It's not so much about the heaven or hell thing. It sounds like this person is conflicted about what happens after you die, so do what you want now, even if you have a religion. They don't see the conflict there. That's cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Most definitely.
And I just find it interesting. If you just, we just have to get them to think a little bit further, just a little bit further, you know, it's the whole thing. It's just, it's amazing. But, again, it's the people in the communities that are being hurt. And, you know, that's what we have to take into consideration. So, you know, we have another caller on the line. Neshem? Are you there? Neshem, I'm going to destroy your name. I'm telling you that now. My apologies. Are you there? Skype caller? Okay, maybe they're not ready to talk. We'll put them back on hold. But
the rapture happened. You got caught in the rapture.
Oh, that's what it is. You know,
yeah, that's why we're
rapture
still here.
Or the religious rapture.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, the YOLO thing feels like a little bit of religious grooming. It's you know, you only live once, so let's go ahead and do what you got to do. But at the same time, you know, you have that wonderful thing that they always come up with called salvation. You can do whatever the hell you want for the first 6 days of the week, but that seventh day, you can get in there, get your little redemption, pay your indulgences, and be on your merry way to do it again for the next week. So that's my interpretation of it. It's more just like Santa Claus, a little bit of religious grooming. It's just another device that they can use and perpetuate. Unfortunately, it's been kind of taken over by what folks call swag bags, and it's been, you know, perverted, and now it's just kind of, I really don't understand the magnitude of it because of the area that I'm in, and I'm not around anyone really under the age of 18, but I'm pretty sure it's pandemic in schools, and it's, you know, it's just as said as much as WhatsApp from, you know, the Scream movie that everyone was using for so long. But it eventually it will pass. It's just something that's going to get stupid eventually.
But I guess my question is, you know, what are the long-term effects of the damage that they've created? So let's just say the people that, you know, for the prosperity churches and even with the YOLO thinking, you know, We'll start with one. I'll start with the YOLO thinking, making bad decisions. So instead of paying, you know, the rent, they decide to go out and buy some clothes because you only live once. I'm going to enjoy it right now. And then 3 months later, you know, they're setting your stuff on the curb, and now you have an eviction on your record, which makes it harder for you to find an apartment. And, you know, there are long-term effects of these things. And even with, you know, the prosperity gospel, you know, promising people that God is going to heal them. And again, some of these people are in very desperate situations, you know, promising that God is going to heal them, God is going to bless them. But when it doesn't happen, tell them that they didn't have enough faith. Yeah. So, it's always
just blame the victim.
The fault.
Blaming the victim type of thinking. But look, when you're doing the you only live once thing, it's either you only live once, so be greedy and selfish, or you can flip it and say you only live once, so why don't you share? So you can use it still to the positive.
I think, like I said, the YOLO movement was really considered to attribute to drugs and sex, especially amongst youth. But you can use it for different things. I mean, I personally use YOLO. I mean, YOLO, I'm going to eat healthy because I want to live longer, or I won't, you know, live reckless, you know, especially when I'm driving or something like that. I make good decisions because I'm responsible not just for myself, but people around me. So it's just the thinking. It's a trend. I mean, we have the Tootsie Roll. And
right. it's interesting. Like I said, we want to use it for something positive. We definitely want to use it for something positive that's going to enrich and, you know, a person's life, enrich our communities, and, you know, encourage productivity. You know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, like I said, I've never heard of YOLO until I just saw YOLO all over the place, had no clue what that is, as well as other acronyms going around the internet. I have to go look it up. You know, I still don't know what FML means. I got 3 or 4 different definitions. I guess it's just a matter of context. We have Nisham back on the line.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me enough this time?
Yes, sir.
That's fantastic. I've been listening to a bit of the conversation, and let's just say I would definitely consider myself something of a free thinker. But in that context, I would just simply say that I was always an individual that was also a very, very curious-minded person. Mm-hmm. And when I say curious, let's just say once put in a particular direction, I chose to examine everything to ad infinitum. And all I can simply say to you is this. as a person who was walking around and doing pretty much everything else status quo obliges, I, as an individual, can attest to the fact that the Creator very definitely can contact and bring you to the attention of His existence. One of the things I'd like to simply say about it is this. One of the first things He told me, and I began to check it out, is that everything we see in this present society after the, let's say, diverse differences of opinion and debate, double-mindedness that we see in the world today, is very definitely an illusion. It's just somebody's orientation, and it's not the mind of the Creator. What I find most astonishing more than anything else, the more I examine, is this. Most people call themselves believers, don't read the Bible.
So wait a minute, wait. Let's
thank you.
We have Rain on the line with us, but you're saying that what we're seeing is an illusion and that people don't read the Bible, and you're talking about a Creator here. So I guess my question to you is, the Creator that you believe in, why does this Creator not, interject or play a part in poverty?
In other words, how do you know that the Creator of yours isn't an illusion?
Can I simply say something to you first before I even answer that question? Because the answer to your questions are very obvious. The answer to your questions are very obvious, but oftentimes, let's just say human mentality is one such that it oftentimes does not want to accept certain responsibilities. But I can just simply say something to you right off the top that I was getting at it first, and I'm going to relate your point. I began to search upon becoming aware that there is a very definitely higher conscience than man.
But we need for you to answer the question, because we want to know if this Creator that you're talking about, if he exists.
Let me ask you a question.
Why does he not partake in active
life? Let me ask you a question. Does man have a purpose?
Hold on. Hey, Kim, can I ask something real quick?
We're talking to you, and we're trying to answer your questions, and we're listening in, but you won't answer ours. So, I put you on hold.
Hey, Kim, can I ask him something real quick, Kim?
Sure, let me put him back. He's back on the line.
Hey, sir. So, I guess from your worldview, you're an immaterialist. You think that your view of the world is an illusion?
What I'm saying to you, sir, is that all the perspectives that man by and large ascribes to after, let's just say, having his senses preconditioned after present status quo, all those perceptions that men by and large uphold to today are the result of man's having fallen away from a sense of reality and setting a pretense that he has an awareness of what is true.
I don't understand what you're saying. I'm trying to figure out your worldview. Because for the most part, the people that's on the line that you're talking to, we're materialists. We don't believe in supernatural beings. We believe anything that can be demonstrated within the five senses. So are you saying that you're an immaterialist? Because we need to know how to talk to you. That's what I'm saying. So if you're an immaterialist and you believe that what you see, smell, taste, and feel is just an illusion, then we need to know that.
Okay. Let me see if I can explain what I mean by when I say it's an illusion. Think about it. We live in a world that's filled with a mass of differences of opinion, correct?
That's true. I agree.
Now, if you add a plus 2 and a minus 2 or a plus 3 and a minus 3, what do you get?
Zero.
You get zero.
If you have a negative and a positive of the same amount, you get a zero. You get a big good.
That's exactly my point. What I'm saying is that we live in a society whose status quo tells us to compromise our thinking after so many diverse oppositions that at the end result, what we live in is a pretense where men suppose that they have a knowledge of the reality, but they are afraid of realizing that they really have not.
Are you suggesting that I'm not trying to assert this or make this a loaded question, but are you suggesting that your worldview has the answer to reality or can't perceive reality as we know it?
Repeat your question, please.
Are you asserting that from your worldview that you can perceive reality? Because you're saying that man, and when you say man, you speak in general,
that we can't perceive reality as we know it?
Well, understand what I'm saying to you, and I'm just going to give you an idea to think about.
Okay.
I believe that man has a purpose in the mass scheme of things. That's the first step. That's the first step. That believe that man has a purpose, or else we're here for nothing. Okay?
All right.
Now,
but
if we understand that man has a purpose.
Do you understand that, though, sir? Like, that's kind of subjective? Like, understand, that's subjective. Like, our worldview says that we only measure reality within our five senses. Until you can prove, or you can, like, demonstrate that it's something else that can measure our thinking or our logic, then we'll accept it. But if you can't, then can you understand why we don't accept it?
I understand the concept that you are relating very definitely, but I have to relate something to you very, very definitely.
All
Many
right.
of us are not prepared to comprehend or deal with the concept of a reality beyond our senses. Therefore, we seek comfort inside what we understand and want to say that there's nothing greater than that. If I shut my eyes to what's around me, it doesn't mean what's around me does not exist. I mean, children have been known in order not to be seen in wrongdoing. I mean, I've seen a child shut his eyes so supposedly you can't see him. What I'm saying
That's
to you is that
true.
Man has oftentimes shut down his greater capacities for, let's just say, ability to perceive beyond the ordinary in order to be satisfied with, let's just say, not just preconceived notions,
But I guess my question to you is your perception of reality. What makes your perception of reality different than the perceptions of other people from other religions, other sects, and even those of us that are non-believers? I mean,
can I say this to you? Maybe that'll help. Can I say this to you?
Because you're basically saying that you have something that's beyond. Because you said beyond reality, beyond our five senses. That's metaphysical. The only way we'll accept that, because we have the same worldview, if you can prove that it's demonstrable, it could be married. I mean, it could be
some things I could tell you if you allow it.
Okay, I'll allow it.
I am going to have to be allowed in order to do it.
Somebody to turn on their phone.
Okay, can you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, let me see if I can explain something to you very quickly. And maybe this might help, but I have to be able to finish the sentence.
There's no reason that you need to look like cotton candy and rainbows with water bottles made out of coming out of your
head. What is that?
Hello?
Yeah.
That's not me, William.
Okay.
I'm going to have
William. Remember what I said.
What you're like... saying is probably right, and I'm still stuck in my bias. I'm still biased, and I guess it's healthy that I can admit that I'm biased.
It sounded like he was talking with us. It sounded like he was talking with us for a second.
I don't know.
Okay, but you know, are we going to really listen to? We got to listen to this guy tell us what he's going to explain something to us that's going to help us understand what he was trying to tell us, right?
No, I don't think so.
Right?
He doesn't understand his own worldview. So
I don't understand how he thinks like okay, well that because there are differing views that those views cancel each other out, and therefore no one knows anything about reality.
Dope Native American look. I was like, you know, this is a gay Indian piece. This is awesome.
Is that?
But, you know,
that's William. Yeah.
That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, he knows how he sounds. Okay, we're going to put, let's see if that fixes it right there. All right, then. Okay.
You know, I can understand. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
You know, I can understand how he would, you know, because if you sit up there and talk to some Christians, you know, or religious people, they'll say, well, how do you know? You know, they'll say that, you know, in other words, they'll act like nobody has the right answer. Nobody knows for sure which way is up. You know, that would be their argument with you, you know. So I can understand how some people could think that, you know, but that's you know, that's their scapegoat. You understand what I'm saying? I think it's an scapegoat. That's all it is.
I agree.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, you know, didn't because even as well as we were, like,
you understand what I'm saying? That's an excuse to not, you know, like I said, when even if you tell somebody to read, or even the history of religion, they'll start fussing at you. I mean, how can you want a prayer in school, yet you don't want to know or have a class on the history of that religion that you claim you believe in?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
right.
make any sense. They don't want
right.
you to.
I had an observation.
I was thinking the other day, you know, here you got this guy who made it possible for everybody to have a Bible. His name was, what, King James? Why do you don't have a King James Day?
Huh? That's a good question. How about this one? Who is King James, and why does he have a version? What he put in,
exactly.
What he take out, okay?
Exactly.
And how about, if you want to start someplace, that might be someplace for a theist to start, you know?
Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking
about. You didn't make sure everybody had a Bible. You make sure everyone did have a Bible, but
mm-hmm.
And then you have to ask who he had to change the language into the English. You got to even deal with them, honey. Okay, so you know they don't even want to get into all of that.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, because,
you know,
like I said, the guy wasn't even clear to what his worldview was. He was saying that reality was an illusion. That's clearly an immaterialist, and he didn't even know that, so.
Right. That's just, right. An exclusive scapegoat. That's all it is. They start talking and not realize what they're even saying.
And just repeating stuff that somebody else told them, and really... You
exactly.
just got to ask them, who told you that shit? Mm. You know, where'd you get that from?
YouTube. I blame YouTube.
Well, no, the guy sounded like what I call, a lot of people consider a faithist. He'll, you know, claim to be a free-thinking, skeptic type person, but he's still subscribing to religious nonsense because everything he was saying stunk of religious dogma and superstition and a big argument from ignorance. I mean, that's as soon as we started talking, I'm like, I did a paper on this, and I couldn't remember the name of it, but then I typed it out, and I remember it's called solipsism. Nothing is real, really, other than what's inside your head, and then you have the only real version of reality, and everyone else's is corrupted, for lack of a better term.
No, I mean, like I said, his
world is Neo.
He was an immaterialist. From what I heard, he was an immaterialist, but you can't really say if he was religious or not, because he was using the term creator. So I don't think he was using the term God. So, I mean, but who's to say? But he's not
right,
even...
Right, and that's why that's why I was trying to nail down for him to, you know, answer a couple of questions that would kind of clear some of that up, you know, trying to figure out, you know, this creator that he was talking about. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. You know, we have different people out there with different ideologies, even within our own community. You have different people with... you know, their different perceptions of whatever. But, you know, again, you know, all right, getting back to the topic, you know, about, you know, you only live once in religious thinking. You know, yes, we only have one life. I'm not sure what that is. Let's see here. We only have one life to live. And... you know, we want you to enjoy it now, but we want you to enjoy it doing something productive. Again, you know, getting away from the reckless behavior, getting away from, you know, allowing yourself to be exploited and manipulated by, you know, people that do not have your best interest at heart. Yeah, you know, groupthink, mob mentality, you know, and to a certain degree, certain social conformities. And what I mean by that is in some communities, you know, it's expected. You know, they don't ask you if you attend church. They ask you where you attend church.
Exactly.
Because they assume. And a lot of that is social conformity. So that's why I say it's important that we start defining the terminology. Define what an atheist is. Define what a free thinker is.
Am I online?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the line.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just wanted to make an observation. I don't know if this guy was arguing from an egotistical dilemma or immaterialism, but I don't think he really had any, you know, rigid philosophical constructs that he was trying. But I really think he represented a failure to the group. I mean, here you're talking about all these, you know, theists that are trapped in their, you know, thought process. But then when one of them calls in, he gets cut apart. I should think he would be the one that people would be most likely want to talk to and try to reach. And that's my only observation.
Basically, well, he thought he knew everything, and he started telling us, he started out by telling us that I've researched it all and I know. And right then, I started rolling my eyes so much, I had to drink a glass of water.
That's the problem, but that is exactly the problem.
Well, here's the thing. You can't reach him if he refuses to define his terms, and he refuses to answer simple questions.
Not reaching them is the problem.
That's not the problem, sir. The problem is he didn't even realize what we're... Did you hear when I tried to reach? Like, Kim was about to put him on hold. I said, you know, hold on. Let's talk to him.
I heard that.
Let's talk to him. But he wasn't even sure, sure what his worldview was. So how can we talk to him if he's not sure what his worldview is if we don't ask questions? Wow.
And we can't let him.
I don't even think it was just that he was unsure. I think that he was also purposefully not telling us what his worldview is, but sitting up there to tell us that we are wrong and that he talks to God.
Raina. And you know what else? We've been on here for an hour and a half, and he was going to filibuster the whole rest of the show, popping in, saying, wait, I'll answer that after I explain some more. And it's, 28 minutes left, and we have not even mentioned that they're about to pick a new pope. And so he would have wasted up that entire time.
That was just an observation I wanted to make. That's just an observation.
But, I mean, and, yeah, you know, I understand. I think that was Ken talking there. I understand about trying to reach people. And
you
to get a better understanding. We have Mario on the line with us, too. And reaching people. And, yeah, you know, we're not reaching, but it's not because of a lack of effort. It's because there are some people out there that have their minds made up, and it doesn't matter how much evidence we present and how much information we put out there. You know,
or
their goal is to proselytize us and to convert us. And
you can only do so much. We try to make him feel comfortable. We try to like ask him questions to find out exactly what he believed and where he fit in, so we can know how to talk to him. And he just did not want to like compromise that. He just kept saying, you know, he kept dodging questions and tap dancing. So nobody got time for that. Nobody got time for that.
But I mean, isn't that typical?
Yes.
No, not from my experience. No. Like, I don't get that all the time. Usually I'll get people to talk to me or whatever.
I've gotten that almost every single time.
They might have a conversation with you while you're talking to them, but then they don't want to be around you no more at all.
I agree.
I mean, that's been my experience universally. I mean, I have yet to talk to anybody who came anywhere close to changing their theistic view because of a good argument or because of logical argument. Let's put it that way.
Right. And so we get this all the time. Now, imagine what the people in the communities hear. Imagine, you know, what's being presented to them. And, you know, it's interesting, but I wanted to bring up one other thing real quick. There was an article that I posted on my wall. This was not too long ago. And basically it was talking about, it was a study that came out of Georgia State University. And I want you guys to go out and look it up. And it's talking about theoretical criminology, if you will. And it was talking about how some offenders basically views the Bible or the role of religious belief among serious street, offenders. And dealing with, fear is one part of it. And it said that, and there are some, not all, but some people that go out there and they'll pray before, they commit a crime, basically saying that if something were to happen to them, that God would, protect them and they'd go to heaven anyway. We have all of these prison ministries, these different churches going into these prisons. What are they teaching? The name of the article is With God on My Side, The Paradoxical Relationship Between Religious Belief and Criminality Among Hardcore Street Offenders. And this came out of Georgia State University. So I definitely want you guys to go and read, what you can, because you have to pay for this article. But there's a lot of interesting things in here.
Vice Magazine has a little documentary about religion in Venezuela, and they have shrines at some of the tombs of some of these, gangsters that have died, and people will, pray or leave cigars, in front of these tombs, hoping that, they won't get caught by the cops or, that someone will get released on parole,
I was just talking to my cousin last week. What I can't understand is, just to give you an idea, the Sandy Hook thing. All right. They said, God called them home. Okay, cool. God called you home. Then why, if that guy was still living, why would we try to put him in an electric chair if he did what God wanted him to do, was to kill these kids to take them home? Why we got prisons? Why we see, it doesn't make any sense. If God called them home and that guy did the job that God wanted him to do, then we would be celebrating them.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually feel like it's kind of cruel. It's kind of cruel that the idea that, you're going to go with the rationale that God gave you this being to love and cherish, and you grow to love this person, this child, for years. You raise this child, you dote on this child, you have fun and have a lot of good memories of this child. Oh, I need that kid back. So let me tap this maniac over here to go kill that kid, because that child is more important to me than she is to you, after you raised her and nurtured her.
That's tripping. I think they're putting some in the food. it's an epidemic of crazy people thinking that way.
I said that last show. I said it's McDonald's.
Yeah. But it was
McDonald's.
So strange. I normally don't eat, fast food. I bought me some Hot Pockets. I hadn't had Hot Pockets in about 15 years. That's it. I had a coupon, of course. I bought me a Hot Pocket. Do you know that I had the strangest, weirdest feeling in my head?
Well, that means you don't need to be buying any more of those.
No, I threw the other one away.
It may not even
give, I wouldn't even give it to my dog,
it
man.
It could have been anything, but it is crazy that all of this stuff is going on and that people are like, oh yeah, God must
it's
have called them
home. It's like they're not
home.
Supposed to. They really think they're not. They don't have a mind to think. It's like, if you believe in God, like you say, God gave you a mind to think. I don't understand.
As far as that YOLO thing is concerned, it's a humorous concept to me that, the way I've seen several people use it, is you only live once, so do as much dumb shit as you can as soon as you can, and if you die, you at least go out with a bang. Or you only live once, so be as careful as you can because you only have this one time to get it right. But, on the flip side, if you're a believer and you believe in an afterlife, then, you kind of have a second chance or something? I fuck up the first time. This is my chance to get it right the second time or whatever. I just think it's just a humorous concept,
I personally try to avoid it, doing as much dumb shit as I can.
Right. Yes, you know, and, you know, the thing is that, you know, they're promised or they're told that they're going to have, you know, a mansion where they, you know, get to heaven and the streets are made of gold and there will be no more pain. And they're promised this utopia, you know, which is the total opposite of how many are living, you know, on this earth in this time and in this reality. And, you know, that is what they want. So, you know, again, it goes back, you know, look up the indulgences, you know, with the Catholic Church. They used to sell indulgences, you know, and, you know, basically these people are being sold, you know, a dream. You know, they're being sold some hope. They're being sold, you know, an idea that things are going to change when they die. And they're being told by some not to worry about what's happening here and now. And it's, a, you know, a distraction. And the whole thing is, you know, we need to start talking to people and getting out there and encouraging them and being supportive, you know, of them actually going out and trying to be productive and live their lives now, not so much as you only live once, because we do, but in a positive way. The whole thing, but, you know, getting back just a little bit, you know, a lot of these people are hearing a lot of different things from different sets of people. So whether it's from different types of religious people, and we have to go ahead and throw ourselves into the mix, you know, the non-believers, this is why so many people have become jaded. And they don't listen to anything that anyone has to say. Because what's happened is, in the past, people have lied to them, especially some of the people that have, you know, opened their eyes. And they see that, you know, they've been lied to by the different religions, and they have a distrust of us because what makes us so different.
Right.
And that's why I say, you know, to a degree, we're going to have to lead by example.
Right.
You know, so, you know, the whole thing is interesting. You know, we're making inroads, but, you know, this community is just starting to grow. We're budding. And, you know, we just have to take different things into consideration. But the main thing, again, know your audience. Know who you're talking to. You know, so when we go into these communities, you know, I know we have some anti-theists out there, and okay, I can understand to a degree where they're coming from. However, we sometimes have to be very careful when we're talking to certain people because we don't know their situation. We
right.
don't know what they've been going through. We don't know, you know, if this person, you know, yes, we see them going to work every day, see them on a train or the bus or walking or what have you, but we don't know that they don't have any food in their house. You know, like if you're at work, if you work somewhere in an office, and you see this one person, and they never go to lunch, and when it's lunchtime, they're always at their desk reading a book or what have you. You know, what is it going to hurt to bring some extra fruit or what have you? And, you know, and have it on your desk, put it in a little basket. And so when you see that person, just walk over and say, would you like a couple of pieces of fruit or whatever? We just don't know what people are dealing with. And, again, you know, again, it goes back to, like I said, some of the, you know, pathology behind a lot of these things. And we have to look at the bigger picture. You know, not everything is cut and dry. Go ahead.
I don't have a problem with people believing different things. You know, most people know, like, I'm on my wall. I try not to go hard to the core and everything on my wall because I do have people who are religious who I knew before I fully became an atheist and all that. And stuff. So I don't want to go out my way to offend anybody. But when I meet somebody like that dude who has this mentality, and what, first of all, the way you're speaking to me and that kind of,
exactly.
And let me explain this to you, you know, kind of like, yeah, let me school you on something that I have discovered, mm-hmm. and you need to listen to me because I know more than you. And that automatically sets me off. And then when you have all these metaphysical reasonings that really make no sense and have no evidence behind it,
right.
And the questions that we're asking you is, how can you explain that? How, what evidence do you have of that other than, well, this is what I believe? You know what I'm saying? Okay. And when they get standoffish, you know, and then everybody's, you know, it be, it becomes a whole big, big problem, you know.
Don't
talking
start, none
like
won't
that.
Be none. Don't start, none won't be none. Simple as that.
Well, but see, this is the thing. The way that I see it is because we deal with, you know, a lot of different types of people, you know, like he's typing some stuff in the chat room, and all I'm going to do is go back and read it a little bit later. And, you know, if we're having, you know, a difficult time trying to get a grasp of, you know, the context in which he's speaking, imagine someone who... who doesn't have a clue, you know, who isn't, you know, a non-believer, someone that is a believer, but who may be a little confused. Imagine what they're hearing. And they're searching for answers, and they're seeking out answers. And when you have these different people showing up, saying these different things to them, they don't know which way to go. They don't know which way to go. And that's why I say we have to be very, very careful.
The thing is, though, when you tell them, like, okay, I want you to read this, or I want you to check this out, or something like that. They won't even go and do that.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. You know, that's the problem that I'm having.
But they can't go. They can't go.
The type of attitude I try to have is, I always try to give them the notion that I'm willing to change my mind. Christianity, especially Black Christianity, there is no fucking way I'm changing my mind. But I have to give them that.
Yeah.
You know, the, hey, you know,
too.
I'll check that out, or I'll check this out. But at the same token, you know, for the, that guy, for example, you know, he was not willing to compromise or even listen. And so, when I talk to people in public or whatever, I'm a big dude, so automatically they got the perception of, oh, he's going to be standoffish. So I sit there with a smile and actually talk to people. And it only works with certain people. Some people still going to look at you like you're stupid, or the hell are you talking about? You Black and you don't believe in God? Like, you crazy?
Even if you read the Bible, it says, with all thy getting, get understanding. I mean, it tells you little things like that all through the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what you're supposed to do. And really, to tell you the truth, when I started reading, that made me want to study. It kept leaving all these clues, man. Nothing to add up.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Deborah. You know, in the Bible, the scriptures do tell them to get an understanding. But the problem is, the understanding that they're trying to get reconciled with what they've been taught. See, and that's the reason why their pastors tell them to, you know, date inside the church and not to go to certain types of denominations. And even they can only go to certain churches that their pastors deem as safe, which is pretty much their friends teaching the same thing. And, you know, the number one way to turn a believer into a non-believer is to challenge them to read their own Bible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does.
Yeah.
It just don't make a lot of things, and it doesn't make any sense. You know,
often when I get into Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, huh?
Often when I get into debates with Christians and I'm bringing up scriptures and everything like that, it seems like they're more pissed off that I posted the scripture than what the scripture is saying.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't write the dang thing. You know what I'm saying? Just read it.
Take
you know?
It out of context. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why you got to bring that up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They pick and
choose.
What they want to believe in. They pick and choose.
Yeah.
You know?
Cherry
picking. My thing is, as soon as they bring the Bible up, I let them understand it. I don't consider that as evidence, because I had that problem before. Like, I was studying to be a minister, and so when I first became an atheist, that's all I was using, because I knew that. I used that as a tool. Like, oh no, that contradicts with this scripture. But I have to check myself. I'm like, if I don't believe it, I won't consider it evidence. Well, how am I even talking about it? So as soon as they start quoting scriptures, I'm like, you do understand that I don't consider the Bible as evidence.
Right.
And it stopped there, right then and there. Like, they're not using no more.
Exactly. You know, the Bible is not evidence. And, you know, yeah, that goes back to that circular thinking. You know, And, you know, they try to use the Bible as evidence. And when you tell them to, you know, not use the Bible as evidence, to give you some type of historical or anthropological account or something to that effect, they can't give
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I try to.
And that's where the anger comes in.
I don't like
ad hominem attacks. Go ahead.
Exactly. Like my whole like goal is not to, you know, convert people to atheism. I just like promote critical thinking and try to like question people's beliefs, to, you know, question the coherency in people's beliefs. And usually I get people come up to me, especially at school, man, you know what? I looked at what you were talking about. It don't make sense. You know, I'm not trying to like, you know, at least I did that. Because that triggers other things. Like, you know what? If he was right about that, I wonder, let me check, you know, let me check this out. You know,
yeah.
So that's what
hey,
I try to do.
I saw a real good cartoon the other day. Did y'all see the one where someone says to someone, hey,
hello?
Oh. Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's a,
no,
they went across, and you just go, what's that lowercase t mean? It's just a way to get them going. I mean, I think if you can talk somebody and have them talk it out, sometimes they can hear the silliness in their own voice. Sometimes.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like I just did in mine.
Yeah, right.
Can't they?
Yes. So, you know, the whole thing, you know, yeah, you know, sometimes taking their words and allowing them to hear themselves and, you know, then that can change some people's questions, change their thinking, change their, you know, the methodology that they use in which to engage others. But, you know, also, you know, some of this applies to us as well. Because,
yes,
like I was saying, yeah, you know, some of the ad hominem attacks out there, you're not going to get a lot of cooperation from people when you're calling them idiots or you're calling them
or
stupid.
Or saying it's stupid, you know.
Exactly.
This is my whole thing, you know, like lately, to be honest, I've been like debating more atheists than theists because the misrepresentation. Like, if you're going to slander somebody, you know, make sure you have knowledge about their religion. Don't just say Mormonism is stupid. Redo some research on Mormonism. Because I'll be honest with y'all, if religion was true, like, Mormonism would have my vote.
Really? Really? You got to be kidding me.
I don't know about that.
Wait a minute. Hold it.
Everybody damn near goes to heaven. It's like, you got to do something astronomical to go to hell. The highest tier of heaven, listen, the highest tier of heaven is your own planet. Like,
no, only if you're a man, though.
Hey, yeah. I know it's subjective. But that's just like, you know, that's just me being silly or whatever. But
Are you brown? Because Second Nephi chapter five, verse like I think like 20 or something like that. Basically,
you think I don't know that. Come on now. You think I don't know that about?
Well,
you know,
I was just sharing it with the listeners. Basically,
okay. that was one of the reasons also that pushed me to study, is because all these religions put down women too.
Yeah,
Last one of them, you know. And I said, now wait a minute, that doesn't mean. I remember when I asked them, I said, you know how they said the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost is the three, right? I asked the preacher. I said, well, where the poo poo at? Well, I had to have a poo poo. Oh, he got mad at me. Well, I have to have a poo-poo now. Oh,
that's
he got
crazy.
Mad at me. You gonna tell me Adam was a mama? Come on.
You know, they don't even really read that, man. Because you know, this woman said that women were a gift to men and everything like that, and I'm like, yeah, but if you read Genesis, he didn't even plan to make that woman. He made that woman only after he couldn't find anybody to help Adam. You're an afterthought if you're going to go by the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I'm saying? If you want to use the Bible to determine your worth, there it is. Not only were you an afterthought, you started all this shit. This is all your fault. You know what I'm saying? You set up Samson. you know, it's funny that, you know, you were going to rely on the Bible to determine your word, but Lot's wife, the people he would, you know, the guy who had the ninja SWAT team come in. Matter of fact, that shit comes on tonight. And there is an angel that is a ninja in that damn show.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right. So you send the ninja SWAT team in to rescue this dude's family. His wife promptly gets executed, not more than 50 feet outside the gate. But that's cool because, you know, we really needed to save Lot, even though he's going to fuck his daughters later on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's the right. truth. How can he be the hero of a story, right? He's the hero of the story. First of all, he offered his daughters up to be raped by the mob. The mob said, we don't want your daughters. Send us your guests. We didn't see them bitches. We don't want them. You can have them later on.
Yeah.
Oh, come
Why
on.
Why would you
Travis,
do that? Why would you do
P
that?
Word. But, yeah, but you're right. You know, they didn't – the whole thing, again, you know, with these different religions and, you know, a certain amount of hatred for women that they have, because these religions, many of them, really do put women down. That's the reason why we have some of the issues we have with sexism in a lot of these different cultures, because the men have been preconditioned to believe that women were beneath them and women should be subservient to them. And when women start speaking up against,
yeah.
you know, some of those particular ideologies, then that's why we get the pushback. I mean, you know, even in our community here, in the Atheist Free Thought community, when you have women talking about sexism, I was called a feminazi, you know, you wouldn't believe some of the emails that I've gotten. I think I'm going to do a show one day called Die, Nigger, Die, because that's some of the email that I get.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
Oh, think about it. But that's the way that they get men to agree with the religion, right? Really?
Yeah.
I got to listen to you, preacher? Yeah, but women have to listen to you. Oh, okay. Okay.
Ego, you know, that's what it is, ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like in the Bible it said, don't, woman is not supposed to talk, and they're supposed to go home and ask their husbands to explain it to them. I said, please.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He was
mm-hmm.
like, looking at my poo-poo.
Yeah, it means you need to shut up and make me a sandwich.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Oh, man. Well, guys, we're down to the last 3.5 minutes of the show. Next week's show is It's Okay Not to Believe. It's okay not to believe. So this should actually be a fun show. But, you know, we're going to basically go through the motions and talk to people about, because there are a lot of people sitting on the fence about whether they believe or not to believe, and that's why, you know, I think it's important for us to define the terminology. And, you know, I have one member of Black Nonbelievers of Chicago in which, you know, he basically, this young man talked to a couple of people who are also members of Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, but at first they were believers or they knew how to dance around the issue without declaring that they were a nonbeliever. And he would listen to their conversations and break it down, and, you know, basically he told them, you're atheists. And at first they shied away and cringed at the thought of being atheists, but then he sent them some links and they talked. And then finally they went and fessed up that they were atheists. And one of those particular people was a regular churchgoer. And I've had pastors
awesome.
Admit
awesome.
To me. Yeah, you know, and I've had pastors admit to me that they know that they have atheists sitting in their congregation. And some of these people, they don't know what to call themselves. They don't understand the definition of it. So that's why I say we have to change the faith of atheism, if you will, get out there and change the conversation. Get out there
yeah.
and answer the questions. You know, it starts and ends with us. And because
atheism is not a white thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said atheism is not a white thing.
Exactly.
The thinking
exactly.
thing.
So, yeah, so guys, you know, next week that should be a lot of fun. You know, topic of the show is okay not to believe. And, again, if you all have any questions, information is on the profile page. And until then, guys, you all have a lovely, lovely weekend. I appreciate each and every one of you Thanks for spending time with me today.
Right, hey,
you.
Kim.
See you later.
Thank
I
you. Hey,
one.
Kim.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you have a festival? You should have a festival, a Black Free Thinkers Festival, and call it Black Folks Thinking. I'll do it like that.
Black Folks Thinking. Well, there you go. BFT, Black Folks Thinking. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
Love you.
Good one, y'all.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone.